surprised. Look at Mr. Rag wearing a shirt.
I'm so behind on the washing, I have no more t-shirts, and I have to get to the fancy side of the closet.
Below the camera, he's wearing nothing.
I am actually wearing very stained jogger bottoms underneath.
I thought you would be.
And a thermal top, which doesn't quite add to the gravitas.
Gravitas is not a word that gets used in this podcast very often.
Is it wool? It's a good merino wool.
What the fuck with you? Wool underwear. Are you well?
He lives in a cold country.
Yeah, so my advice to everyone, get good base layers made out of merino wool.
Wool makes me itch.
I like my base layers and my jumpers to be as itchy as possible. I want like 100% acrylic.
Yeah.
I want it to be like acrylic that's not been woven into a jumper. I want it to be like little bits of plastic digging into my body constantly.
If you're sitting comfortably, then we'll begin. Well, hey there, fellow nerds and ne'er-do-wells. I'm AJ, and welcome to the Adventurers Anonymous podcast, the home of fantasy fucknuggetry. Come join us week by week as a rotating cast of geeks sip cocktails, play Dungeons & Dragons, and dance around the boundaries of common decency. Joining me this week are the usual crew of dubious intent. First up, coming to you from the steel city of Sheffield, we have two people who many see as the owl and the pussycat of this tale. I will leave you, dear listener, to decide which is which. It's Mr. Chris Rag and Mr. Chris Neal. How you doing?
A reference to something.
You must have heard of the nursery rhyme about the owl and the pussycat.
You Gen Z.
I've not heard of this.
What?
No, me neither. Sorry.
Google that shit. Read a book.
The frog and the scorpion kind of thing. Like, there's one betraying the other.
You had a pea green boat.
Maybe it's a southerner thing. Maybe they didn't have that in Yorkshire.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Is it a series of books?
The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat.
I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to introduce our next player. And in the meantime, you can go on Google and you can read all about the owl and the pussycat. But be very careful how you type it, because we're talking about the nursery rhyme and not the porno. Okay. Next up, coming to you from the freezing lands of Finland, catch him before he melts, it's Mr. Matt Durant. How you doing, buddy?
Guten Abend.
Ah, guten Belen to you too. How are you?
I'm good. I've actually booked a trip to Germany next month.
Really?
Which will be very exciting. My first time there.
And what will you be doing?
Going to Hamburg and Berlin.
Ah.
And I'm going to Hamburg Miniature Wunderland, which is just a massive train set and tiny miniature thing, and it looks amazing.
Is it like a bring your own trains, or will there just be trains that you go see? Like, can you put your own train on this massive thing and then get really sad when you lose it? Like, because it takes about 5 hours for it to go around the track. It's like a really big baggage carousel.
Follow-up question. If you can bring your own trains, do they have to just be model trains, or can I just drive in with a huge train and drive straight through the convention center?
You could try. I think you'd need rails, but...
You're making a mockery of his convention, Chris. A mockery.
Just a little thing. I can get around that. I got a rails guy.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be a repeat of the recent Willy Wonka experience.
Oh, fucking looks amazing, doesn't it?
What is this?
What the fuck goes on in the Rag household? He's not heard of the owl and the pussycat, and he's not heard of the Willy Wonka experience. Somebody educate him.
Look, everybody relax. Everybody relax.
This is some kind of sex position.
He's had a lot of laundry to do.
Yes.
Okay. He's had a lot of laundry.
Listen to the Willy Wonka Experience podcast?
Yeah. Wonka cast.
It was an event in Scotland that was advertised basically just using like AI-generated gibberish copy that was advertised as like this great experience for kids for like 35 quid a ticket.
Ooh.
And then they got there and it was literally just like a rundown warehouse with like a couple of little bits and things and like a random scary villain character called Mr. Unknown who looks like who looks like a meth addict's dream of what V for Vendetta could have been.
I didn't know about this bit.
Have you not seen the videos of The Unknown or Mr.
You've
Unknown?
Got to look it up. It's so fucking funny.
I think V for Vendetta is also already quite disturbing.
Apparently all the kids got a single jelly bean and a small glass of lemonade each.
Yes. Apparently there was no chocolate in the Willy Wonka experience. Although, did they have Oompa Loompas? I don't know. Maybe we'll send an investigative journalist, our man on the ground, Mr. Matt Durant, to investigate.
Yeah. Our man in Willy Town, Mr. Matt Durant.
That's what they call me.
Judging by the fact it's washing day, I think Mr. Rag's probably in Willy Town at the moment.
Our very own private dick goes to check out the dicks. I've gone off on a tangent now.
I see what you did there. I see what you did. Okay, right. Are you all finished with lampooning the Willy Wonka experience? Or
stop asking us if we're ready because it's so tempting to just get derailed again.
Derailed? A good reference to your model railway convention.
Yeah, oh no, it's happened again.
Ah, the loop.
Matt, I know you're trying really hard to keep us on the rails, but we got to talk about these rails.
Time is a flat circle.
Hang on, I got that one. That was True Detective. Is that True Detective?
Ah, yeah.
Woohoo! That's not a comedy. I didn't laugh. Now, this is a serious time, listeners, and by the time you finish listening to the recap, you'll know why. All right, because last we left our intrepid adventurers, they had gone off the rails a little bit. They had found themselves invited to a countryside wedding in the little village of Baden Knox, where they had bumbled upon a couple who had recently got married, who were celebrating their wedding vows. And they found themselves invited to the village hall, where the wedding party was going on. And they were told that they could come along and rest a while and have a drink and some food. Whilst they were there, Hanash decided to, now that he was human again and no longer a vampire, he was going to get in touch with his chaotic sponsor. And get in touch he did, finding himself a mirror and talking to Jerry from Evil Incorporated. If you don't know who Evil Incorporated is, get yourself back about 100 episodes and you'll find out that Hanash is sponsored by the god of chaotic evil. And the more evil Hanash does, the more boons are released to him. Well, on his reintroduction to Evil Incorporated, Hanash was given a bottle of poison and told to make chaos. Now, all would have been well, except Tatty Bojangles decided to join him on this endeavor. And between the two of them, they managed to mastermind one of the most tragic weddings that's been seen outside of HBO in the last 10 years. And many, many, many innocent people died. And that is where we left the action last episode with the bloodbath of the poisoning, with half the wedding lying on the floor, having vomited up their own intestines and blood. And the adventurers just being there, Tatty and Hanash lying amongst the dying, and Belsiar standing on a stage watching them all in dismay. If that sounds crazy to you, listeners, imagine how I felt when I finished DMing last week. Well, that's where we pick up this week. And all I can say to you all is good luck.
I did it my... Oh, my God!
This is still the night of. We haven't rested till morning yet. Okay.
Can we stop referencing really highbrow HBO shows? This isn't the Red Wedding. It's not the night of.
I was hoping someone would fucking get that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
I forgot you. I forgot you have like secret inside track with Riz Ahmed. Shout out to Riz Ahmed.
Riz Ahmed definitely doesn't listen to this podcast, but I did go to school with him, listeners.
Really?
And yes,
I was in the same room as him once.
Got embarrassed when I said hello to him in a pub in Holland Park and pretended that he didn't know me. But Riz, if you are a long-time listener, I've not forgotten you.
What room were you in, Matt? Miniature locomotive?
This was Nation of Shopkeepers in Leeds, and he was doing a gig, so not, you know, very, very low stakes claim to fame.
Who was doing a gig? Sorry?
Your mate Riz.
Oh! Oh, wow. Yes. Good old Riz Ahmed. Anyway, we're not sponsored by Riz Ahmed, listeners. So come on then, what are we doing here? You are basically, just to paint a little picture, Tati, Hanash, you lay down with the dying. Don't ask me why. Those were your last requests. And you are on the slick, wet floor of the village church hall, where it's bloody and there's twitching bodies and the dying and the horrible laconic sounds of crying, of weeping people who did not drink the punch and survived somehow. And Belsiar, you're just standing on the stage. A bit like the end of Platoon, where Charlie Sheen just looks at the disarray of death and carnage and Barber's Adagio for String plays. That's kind of where we pick up with Belsiar. So Belsiar, come on, let's start with you. What are you doing, buddy? How are you feeling?
Some degree of shock, some degree of confusion at this excellent wedding musical night that has turned into disaster. Is Aristobulus around? Is he anywhere to be seen?
Is he dead?
Is he dead? I don't know. Can I roll some medical checks? Can I see if I can help anyone? Is it too late?
Yeah, absolutely. If your first thought is to help and spare the dying, yeah, absolutely. You can see one of the band members who not long ago you were playing with, the man who was playing the lute. You see him clutching his stomach as blood is pouring out the corner of his mouth. If you wish to assist him in some way, make me a medicine check, please.
Yeah, I'd like to give the Heimlich maneuver.
I forgot that Belsiar did his musical thing last episode, and when you said that he was playing with him, I was going to make a joke that while this man was playing his lute, Belsiar was playing with this man's banjo string.
Ah, yeah.
One of the more disgusting jokes I've ever thought to make.
I don't think it's even top 10 for you.
I'm sorry to report that I've rolled a natural one, so...
Ah, shit. You see him, his name was Ralph, just for reference, and you'd sparked up somewhat of a burgeoning relationship. Friendship, wasn't sexual, listeners. Friendship with him as you'd been jamming.
Like, hey, Ralph.
You see blood coming out the corner of his mouth as he's gone a shade of white that looks unhealthy. He looks worried. You get behind him, you do the Heimlich maneuver and you pump, and the forceful squeezing ejects more blood out of his mouth as a beam of bright red crimson viscera shoots out of his mouth, spraying over the sheet music, dripping down off the music stand as he just hacks up more and more viscera as he collapses limp, flaccid in your arms and just crashes to the floor, twitching.
God, I'm sorry, Rob. Are there any clerics? I need a cleric.
You see, at the back of the hall, looking up with disarray, you've got blood like pouring down the side of your face. It's not yours, it's Ralph's. You look over and you see the trendy youth pastor, Amos Hawthorne, at the back, saying last rites over dying people.
Trendy Amos, do a mask cure wounds or something. Do something.
He looks at you with just shock and pity in his eyes as he looks over the crowd. I mean, he's a good 30 feet away from you at the back of the hall. He's almost in shock. He just looks at you and says, I'm not that kind of guy.
I'm going to look around suspiciously to see if Tati and Anash are anywhere.
Anash is giggling at this point, by the way, like pretending to be asleep but giggling.
I think Tati's, like, pretended to be asleep and then just passed out.
It is worth noting, listeners, which I didn't say in the recap, Hanash and Tati were slightly worse for wear in the last episode, and with the amount of time that's passed, it is to be assumed that both of them are still going to be fairly hammered. Nobody sobers up that quickly, even in a massacre. I'm not even going to make you make a perception check, Belsiar, because you've seen your friends so many times you can pick them out of a crowd. You just see them lying on the floor, prone in front of you in the crowd of twitching, bleeding people.
I run over to them and I kind of try and do some first aid. I'm like, Tati, Hanash, wake up. Tell me it's going to be okay.
Hanash just like sits bottle right up and goes, oh, it's going to be okay. And then starts to hunt down people and take them down with his morning stuff.
Oh, shit, listeners. Is this in like a spare the dying kind of way, or are you taking out survivors? Like, what's no, happening?
I'm taking out the survivors. The people that didn't drink the punches are people that Ash is after. Oh, like, he's Jesus utter Christ. Chaos. No prisoners. Not on this day.
Okay. Hanash, I'm going to come back to you on that one as you run around wildly bludgeoning survivors with your Morning Star. You're looking on in horror, I presume, Belsiar. And Tati, what's your demeanor? How are you feeling in all of this, other than slightly drunk?
It probably takes a couple of tries to wake Tati up. But unlike Hanash, he was actually asleep. I don't know how much sleep he got, maybe half an hour, something like that. So maybe a quick power nap, maybe.
Murder is tiring work.
He eventually opens his eyes and just rolls over a little bit and cracks his back on the hard floor, and he's like, "Oh, Belsiar, is that you?" He's not even opened his eyes at this point. He's just like, "Ah.
Are you okay, Tati? Are you poisoned?"
"Yeah, it's bad."
"Oh God."
"Yeah, it's bad. I think I need. I think I need a again." He probably thinks it's morning at this point. He's just like, "I think I need. I need some greasy food. 10 cc's of strong black coffee."
"We'll get you some brunch. We all want some brunch, but Hanash has gone mad. He's just killing everyone."
And then I think he opens his eyes and sees everyone around him. I was going to say that he probably doesn't remember it at first. Maybe I'll make a wisdom saving throw just to see how much he remembers. He was very drunk.
I mean, only half an hour has transpired since then. So yeah, you're more than welcome to make a wisdom saving throw. But you're going to have to do well to forget what you've done.
Well, I was going to say, is it high forgets it or low forgets it?
You're rolling
I got
for
an
number.
8. I got an 18.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, you're in, I think you're in full denial. I think you're in some state of trauma.
I think as soon as he sees the people laid on the floor, he's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa. What the fuck?"
Well, both of you look round and just see Hanash staving in skulls. I mean, Hanash, make me an attack with your Morning Star.
Sure thing. Let's go.
25. I mean, you just watch him pounding through the middle of the hall where there is a man cradling the dying form of his wife. You just see Hanash taking a backswing, smashing the skull of the man, flinging him like some sort of ragdoll across the church hall where the man smashes into the trestle table full of food as it all tumbles over, spilling. People are now dragging bodies and just standing up and running as screams and cries start echoing around the hall louder than the tears.
"It's all for you, Jerry! It's all for you!"
Little by little, Tati, splinters of the events are slowly piercing your brain as mention of Jerry starts bringing uncomfortable tastes into your mouth and feelings and sensations. Oh, Belsiar, you may be the only innocent person left.
I think Tati throws up, just straight up vomits on the ground. I really do have a drinking problem.
I shout, "Come on, Boon boy, are you not joining in?"
"Boon buddy?" He vomits on the ground and then he doesn't know what to do. His hands are sweating from thinking about what he's done. He doesn't know how to explain it, and he doesn't know how to make it stop now that Hanash has got up and just started killing people again.
Tati, as you look up, I need you to make me a perception check, please.
22.
As you double over, vomiting bile and almost an empty stomach, but still fluids are coming out. You look up as your eyes focus from the fogginess and haziness of all the alcohol. You look clear across the hall and you see something that captures your breath as it halts in you. As you look over, you see the brothers, Jeffrey and Pete Bogdanoff, one cradling the dead form of the other, just holding his head in his lap.
No, no.
As you look over at Belciar and back over at the Bogdanov brothers.
I mean, like, what's one extra trauma on top of an already disassociated person? It's fully, like, wide-eyed, just watching what's going on around him, literally having, like, flashbacks to where he probably did, you know, if not our wedding, probably did, like, similar types of, like, similar scales of massacres when he was in the army. He's just not moving. He's just staring at what's going on. People are probably, like, bumping into him, like, running past him to get out.
People are fleeing, Hanash. And you see Tati and Belciar, the braver amongst the members, are trying to pick up makeshift weapons. Somebody snaps the leg off a chair and tries to take Hanash on. But what chance does a random villager who ploughs fields against a half-orc warrior of such...
No chance.
...experience as you just watched the tiny leg of the chair just splinter into 1,000 pieces as Hanash's mace goes clean through it, catches the man in the sternum, flipping him in half like a mere doll, like a toy, as he just crumples into a heap on the floor, as Hanash again cackles, shouting the word Jerry. Are you proud, Jerry? Are you proud?
It's all for you! It's all for you, Jerry! Somewhere, Jerry is like, he's having the best morning shit of his life, just listening to this. I keep forgetting it's not actually morning.
Belciar is going to look from Tati vomiting on the floor to Hanash's reign of terror to Kato's fresh grave to PB&J. Doesn't matter which one died, they were both...
I don't know J without the PB.
It's come to this. I'm going to attack Hanash. I'm going to say someone has to stop his reign of madness.
Let's fucking go.
Let's go.
One shall stand. One shall fall.
This is real Iron Man, Captain America.
Oh my god, listeners.
A real civil war situation.
Oh fuck, I've actually genuinely got goosebumps right now. Right, I need both of you roll me initiative, please. Belciar, I'll give you a surprise round, because Hanash is busy just staving in skulls of the innocent.
Go advantage.
I get 3.
Okay, I rolled 14 on both.
Alright. Gladiators, you will go on my first whistle. Contenders, you will go on my second whistle. Right, Belciar, you're up first. I'm leaving this very much in your hands, and how far you want to go with it, I am letting this go, listeners. This is in the hands of the players. Belciar, you're up first with a surprise round. Hanash is facing away from you, just taking out an elderly lady who's trying to fight him off with a walking stick.
It's got to be Ice Knife. Isn't it?
You almost killed me with it before.
This is going to be like Civil War, in that you two fighting will do way more damage to everyone around you than if Hanash was just massacring everybody. It's just like the footage of like the Iron Man Hulkbuster armor versus the Hulk. Just like destroying a fucking city.
Exactly.
Go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. Ice Knife. What level are you casting this at?
I'll say 4th level.
Jesus Christ, listeners.
But that's a +6 to hit, so that's a natural 1. No, that's a natural 7. Sorry, thank God. So that's a 13 to hit. But I don't think that hits. So you don't take the piercing damage, but you do take, so if you make a dexterity saving throw, the explosion, and presumably anyone else in 5 feet, including old women.
18.
Yeah, I will roll for a smattering of the innocent. The old lady got a natural 20 on her dex saving throw, as she's been in the wars. She's a survivor of the goblin wars.
Turns out this old woman is like fucking Baba Yaga or something.
Yeah. You just hear a little Weasley voice going, "Incoming!" And she just like leaps to one side with a litheness that somehow manages to save her life.
I got 18.
You are happily, merrily lost in your own bloodlust, just hacking and slicing away at the innocent, almost finding a playful release in it. As something whistles past your ear and thuds into a body on the floor next to you, you look down at it in slight bewilderment, watching a giant shard of ice crackling as almost like shimmering with cold. As you know that, as you take a moment to throw yourself to one side as it explodes, showering the room with razor sharp shards of ice as you look up through your bloodlust.
Hamash just thinks I've decided to join in.
You've seen Belciar use ice knife and not hit him, so he's just like, oh, okay, so Belciar just wants to have some fun.
Should I roll perception check to see if I notice that he's trying to attack?
I mean, I'm gonna say, for the point of narrative, like, Belciar, I presume that you've given some sort of monologue or done something that is in some way indicating.
I think I've just like screamed like, ah. And I think it'll be funnier if I leave that up to Hanash if he thinks that's like a battle cry.
Yeah.
Or a perception check. Or
if you want to roll me a perception check. Like,
yeah, I think that'd be quite funny.
It's either a Gandalf style, "You shall not continue," or it's, "You ruined my chance to fuck a trendy youth pastor."
Wow.
There's a sliding scale there.
It ends badly for the youth pastor either way.
I got 12.
12? You're really on the fence. You look up quizzically at Belciar. He's almost got that petulant rage of, like, you know, the school child trying to stand up to the bully. You just see crocodile tears rolling down his cheeks. You see Belciar's hand is shaking, evidently, visibly shaking, with a wand in it. You can see he's perturbed and angry.
His jaw, I say, good. Quivering. I'm glad you've come to the chaos and join me in my victorious conquest. And then I
no, Hanash, I'm here to stop your conquest.
But we're such old friends. I thought you'd just get moved past this little blip. It's just a blip.
What's a polite massacre between friends?
A minor massacre between friends.
Of all the people we've burnt to death, and you're worried about this old...
I know, but they were always at least kind of, you know, 50% on the justifiable side. This is just a wedding, Hanash. I was having fun. There was karaoke.
And that really was the straw that broke the camel's back. You ruined my karaoke.
I didn't know there was karaoke.
The episode title we never knew we needed, quote unquote. But Hanash, there was karaoke.
I'm going to say that dialogue, that back and forth, was your turn, Hanash, as you've just beaten an old lady as well. So, Belciar, back to you as you stare down your half-orc colleague.
I know I'm not in the initiative order because I'm just stood there.
You can come in if you want.
Can I make some kind of check? I've been able to see all in the past. Can I see the spirits of the people that in this room that have already died?
Make me a religion check, please, Tatty Bojangles.
Oh, it's not bad. It's a 15.
A 15. Yes. More and more you can see what started as almost a shifting and a kind of like fog over the dying bodies. You see through the grief, through the haze, through the hangover, you start seeing you're only faintly aware of them. They are in very low definition, but almost like steam rising off the bodies. You're aware that not only a physical event has occurred here, but also a spiritual event and you feel the full weight of the grief and the sadness and the mourning of the spirits. We need to keep on going, unless you want to tag into the initiative order.
I can wait until we come back around.
I love this mental picture of Tatty Bojangles just sort of almost just half standing, half sitting there in disbelief, his eyes wide as he comes round from the fog of drunkenness, just staring at the death and carnage and his two friends just standing off against each other. As we get back to Belsiar, what are you doing in this showdown of the ages?
Knowing my good friend Hanash's trusty resiliency, I realize the only way to gain the upper hand is to cast Stinking Cloud on him and the surrounding guests.
That's my usual go-to.
Turns from like a kaiju battle into just two guys fighting in a room and trying to out stink each other.
Go on then, Stinking Cloud.
Makes the noise my butt makes.
What are the conditions?
Sphere of nauseating gas lingers for a minute, and every creature must make a constitution saving throw of 14 against poison.
Include you, Tatty.
Guess I'm casting it out of my own range.
You're covering off a lot of the hall with a 20-foot.
I think you can place it within a certain range. I don't think it has to be coming out of you. Unless you actually want it to be farts.
I got an 11.
So, on failed save, the creature spends that action, its action, retching and reeling.
What did he get, Hanash?
11.
11, yeah. As you look up, you see Belsiar pulling something out of back pocket as he just crumbles something in his hand and just blows it off the palm of his hand as you see it turn into a swirling vortice as it spins around the middle of the room. Your eyes start itching and then your nose starts closing up as you cough.
That was a truly
splatter.
disturbing noise.
That was a shart. Tatty, what did you get?
Me? Am I included in the cloud?
I'd say you're close enough, yes.
Yeah, I guess.
This is only a tiny church hall. This isn't like the O2 Arena.
Con save. Bad. I got an 8.
You too, Tatty, as you look through blurry eyes, through the hangover, through the drunkenness, through the pity, through the fear, through the sadness, through the spiritualism, your connection to the other world. Suddenly, you're just a dry, wheezy cough as you're like... as you just start, like, doubling over, coughing. As you look up at your crocodilian friend, just you know it's him. You know Belsiar's done this. You've smelt this shit before, or at least the aftermath of it. You know, you smelt it, you dealt it.
Like, yeah. I've been around Belsiar's coffin.
Yeah.
His now defunct coffin. That's my action, right? Like, I can't, well, actually, it's Hanash's turn before mine.
I'm just going to... I won't move, but I'll say, like, Tatty! He's gone crazy! He's trying to kill us!
This is like two divorcing parents and a child standing between them, and they're both trying to get... Like, I'll let you stay up later. I'll let you eat dessert before first course. Come on. Come on, come on, come on. Right, okay. Hanash, you're trying to win over Tatty. Tatty, what are you doing in all of this? Like, you're coughing and wheezing. Are you taking a side, or are you the Switzerland of this war crime?
I think Tatty's going to try and get out of the stinking cloud to where he can get his thoughts back. And then he's going to look and realize that he's found himself in a position again where a dramatic person has convinced him that... commit atrocities, but now he has no excuse because he was just drunk. And in his words, he wanted to do more heists, but he was handed poison instead. Tatty's gonna, seeing it as almost the only way to try and solve this without getting involved, he's gonna try and reach out to Jerry.
Okay. I like this. Oh, God, drama, listeners.
I have spoken to Jerry before.
Yes.
During Hanasha's 360-degree performance review.
You are aware that you will probably, and you've seen enough of Hanasha to know that you'll probably need a mirror to try and forge that level of communication.
I pull out my... I think I do actually have a...
makeup mirror in your clutch bag.
I have a mirror. I also have a makeup set that I think we stole from that, like, tabaxi person. I also have my hip flask, if you would allow me to look at that, like, reflection instead.
I think the irony of trying to call somebody after your drunken massacre in the reflection in a hip flask would be too good to turn down.
Can we make it so the smaller the mirror, the higher Jerry's voice gets?
Yes! 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 No. Tati, whilst this is going on, you pull yourself out of the fog of stench and putrid, horrible decay as you lungfuls of fresh air, as you're just dragging yourself through dead bodies and blood on the floor, as you lean up against the wall at the side of the church hall, pulling out the first shiny thing that you can find, which is your hip flask. You stare at your own slightly distorted reflection in it as you wipe blood off it with your sleeve, as you try and call Jerry. I need you to make me a religion check.
I swear to God. I swear to God, it is a natural 20.
Just for the suspense, we've literally held the listeners in suspense here whilst two of our main characters are trying to kill each other. Tell me the words you're saying into your hip flask. How are you calling Jerry?
I think, like, because the hip flask has got like a dent on in the middle of it, I have to like keep moving it from side to side just to be able to get like a decent reflection of myself.
You hear fumbling. Everything is dark on the side of the flask as you hear like a crackling, rumbling noise, and you hear Jerry's voice very distantly talking, but not to you. You hear him saying, "Yes, yes, I will have the fish and maybe a nice Ryoka. What do you think, darling? Would you like red or white?" As you can hear Jerry's voice quite far away, ordering food.
I catch him on date night, essentially. I just scream at him again. I'm like, "Jerry! Jerry, listen to me!"
As on a natural 20, you realise you've managed to pocket dial Jerry as Jerry's out to dinner with his wife. As you're screaming Jerry, as he's like, "Hold on, darling. Work is calling." You hear a rumbling, like, scraping noise as Jerry's face, like, far larger than normal, as he's like, "Yes,
presses
yes.
up against the side of the flask.
How did you get this number?
My name is Tati Bojangles. I'm an associate of Hanash Smith, one of your big time earners. He's big in the world of chaos. I need you to stop him. I need you to stop him from doing what he's doing right now. He's massacring everybody at a wedding."
Make me a persuasion check.
I'm going to use the same dice again.
It's going to be a one then.
It is a natural 18, which I think is a persuasion is a 21.
As he says, "I'm out on date night. Do you know how hard it is to find a demonic babysitter? I got a booking at Spread and Dip by Ruben Guaves. It takes months to get a sitting there. And you come to me telling me..."
"Give me the boon so I can put him down."
"Why would I put down one of my biggest hitters? He's doing the work of chaos."
"The chaos that you're getting from this moment, I know you can feel it. You're at dinner, like you're not supposed to be feeling this good all day on a date. You know that something's happening right now because Hanash is trying to kill everybody at this wedding and our other friend is trying to stop Hanash. So that feeling that you're getting is about to skyrocket."
He looks at you for a while as he says, "The only feeling that I get is the fact that I've had to take my wife to dinner because she found stripper dust on my trousers. And now I'm paying over the odds to have a man cook insipid fish and serve it to me in small portions so that my wife will let me sleep in my own bed that I'm paying for on credit very slowly. So maybe you can make me an offer that I can't refuse." As you hear him go off call for a minute, as he's like, "Yes, yes, the fish. I said the fish." As he comes back onto the call. "Sorry. Hello, is the line still collected?"
"A chance to do a 360 degree performance review of your performance, Jerry. Ticks box for unhelpful."
"You want to do a 180 on the 360?
Employee of Evil Corp brought up personal problems during this customer communication. There was talk of a boon that never manifested. I just say, you've been no help to me whatsoever."
"Listen to me."
And I'm just going to put the flask away.
As somewhere in a restaurant, a demon is like, "Unfucking believable." As he looks back at his wife, who's just giving him panoramic shit eye, as he's crouched in the corner taking a phone call, as he's like, "Sorry, darling, work." As he sits down very noisily back at the table, just pushing his little starter around the plate with his fork, sighing. Right, so you've given up on Jerry. Okay.
I've given up on Jerry. I don't think I have an action this turn because I was still in the stinking cloud when I started. So,
I mean, that was more than 6 seconds, so you've done well for someone who didn't have an action.
Yeah, I guess that's just the end of my turn.
Excellent. At the end of your turn, you put down the flask, deeply sighing to yourself. You just feel a horrible sickness, a bile rising in the back of your throat. That must be Belsiar's turn. Belsiar, what are you doing?
I don't want to use breath weapon against Hanash. There's no other thought in my head but toasty roasted half-orc on the menu.
Triple cooked half-orc.
I don't know if this is technically allowed. I'm going to use careful spell on myself to make myself immune to the stinking cloud.
I don't know if you can do that retrospectively.
Yeah.
I don't think. I think you do that. Let me check the rules on that.
It would have to be when you casted it.
Yeah, I think it's when you cast it. I don't think you can do it. Yeah, it says when you cast a spell. Yeah. Literally the first words.
Oh, okay. Not to worry. I'll stand just outside the cloud. Assuming I'm like, yeah, I can do it because the cloud's 20 feet.
Yeah.
And breath weapon is 30 feet. So I'm just going to exhale fire into the air. Towards Hanash and anyone who happens to be in the vicinity.
Do you have to roll a disadvantage? I'm concealed by the stink cloud, so you can't see me.
I don't think it quite works like that. I mean, it's stinky and it is a sort of roiling miasma of stench, but I don't think it's like, it's not like a giant privet hedge.
It could be like a cartoon stink where it's just like lines in the air.
It does say heavily obscured.
Oh, crap, listeners. There we go.
So, yeah, I can't actually see into it.
Jesus Christ, this fart is so feral, you can't even see into it. It's a roiling, swirling mass of stench just spilling around inside a cube. Inside a sphere.
Yeah, I can still just breathe fire into it, right?
But I would assume that Hanash would get advantage on whatever he was doing inside it.
So that's a dexterity save for a 13.
Go on, honey.
Which, yeah, I guess you'll get advantage on that.
You're 2 19s.
So you take half damage, which is at 6th level, 3d6. So that's 3 damage.
3 damage? What?
Just that little moment where Chris Ragg was like, oh, fuck.
What I'm getting here is a mental image is just watching a crocodile trying to light his own fart really unsuccessfully. He's just got one finger with thaumaturgy with a flame as he just crouches over trying to light his own cloaca. Right, well, that's not done too much damage. Just a light burn on you there, Hanash. You now know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, your friend has it in for you. The tide has turned, Hanash.
So, do I have to roll another constitution saving throw since I'm still in the stink cloud?
Completely within the cloud at the start of its turn. Must make the throw. You can run out of it, I think, quite easily. But
you can run out of it, yeah, but you'll have used
you won't have an action because you have to.
You won't have an action this turn.
Unless I beat the constitution saving throw.
Yeah, I
got a 14 constitution. What do I need to beat?
Meets it, beats it.
Yeah!
So you can run out and, I guess, use an action now.
Yeah. You're now acclimatized to his fart. It's fully in your eyes, ears, nose, lungs. Like, you've had one of these before. Have at it.
So I run at the direction that I remember seeing Belsiar in, and I probably, like, fall into him if he's just on the outskirts of the stinking cloud, I guess.
Knock over all the band's equipment. Knock over the drum kit.
Are you trying to grapple him?
No, but I just, in my head, like, because I don't know he's there, I'm probably going to, like, clumsily.
Oh, right, you see, smash into him. Belsiar, out of the roiling, swirling stink cloud, you just see it shimmer as the green form of Hanash just flies out.
I'm going to make a morning star attack. And then I'm going to use my superiority dice for something, but we'll see if I hit first. 12 to hit.
Look how stressed Tati is, listeners. You can't see this, but Tati is like, shit.
Like, he's jumped up onto the edge of his desk on his tiptoes.
This is the first time I've ever done this in this chair, but I'm perching. I'm perching, listeners. Ooh, it's quite comfy.
Ooh,
it feels comfy in my toesies.
12 to hit, Belsiar.
That doesn't hit.
Doesn't hit?
No.
Okay, let's give the second attack.
Slipping and sliding on blood on the floor, you swing with your Morningstar arcing. It just narrowly misses the end of the snout of the crocodile as you feel the air rush past your face.
21 to hit.
That hits.
We're going to start with the Morningstar damage, which is 12. then the superiority damage will be 5.
Oh, this is amazing.
And what do I want to do with it, though? I'm going to go with menacing attack, because that sounds fun. When you hit with a weapon attack, you can expend one dice to roll damage. So they're going to make a wisdom saving throw of DC 14. On failure, they're frightened until the end of my next turn.
Wisdom saving throw. That's a 17.
Yeah, beat it. So yeah, you just take the damage, there's no other effect.
Okay, yeah, the first swing missing as Hanash slips on blood as he props himself up on the floor with a hand, raises himself back up and backswings with the mace, cracking you across the snout, Belsiar. You think you can feel a tooth chip as you taste the coppery blood in your mouth as you look at the angry, angry form of the half-orc standing in front of you, standing in front of the swirling cloud of...
Okay, first off, can I see them? Can I see Hanash and Belsiar?
So you're to the side of the cloud. You can see the cloud directly in front of you, and off to your right, you can see your two friends having at each other on the edge of the sphere.
Oh,
the tension, listeners. The tension. You could cut it with a knife.
I'm going to bonus action steady aim to give myself advantage. and I'm going to shout, Hanash! Stop this madness! And then I'm going to fire.
Seems a little hypocritical.
My killings have paled in comparison to Tati's poisoning.
Belsiar really has no idea This is all very clear cut to him now. Like, it's him and Tati versus Sadash.
That is a 26 to hit.
He's a definite hits.
We should never have given him such a good bow. Jesus Christ.
Hanash has got pretty high armor class. If I didn't have advantage, the first one was a natural one. So that would have been...
How much damage does Hanash take?
Let me just... 20 damage.
Oh, shit.
So, Tati, pulling back your bow, it's quivering. You don't want to do this. You're feeling all kinds of guilt and confliction. You wait for the perfect moment as you let go of the bowstring. You see the arrow fly true and find a chink in the armor underneath the armpit where the two plates part. An arrow flying straight and true, straight up into Hanash's armpit. You feel the blow, the crushing, piercing pain, Hanash, as you look over at your friend who only minutes ago was helping you aid you in your chaotic deeds. All of you staring at each other like Spider-Man in a triangle, just pointing at each other. Oh, dear God. Just time for one more twist, listeners, before we end this episode. Belsiar, you feel a prod in your back. As you spin around, you see the elderly form of old Natty, the elderly lady that Hanash was playing with. She's holding an empty vial in one hand as she tugs on your sleeve and says, "You know, this is your fault. You brought this upon this village." As she hands you the now empty vial, it has no label on it anymore, as she says, "They poisoned the village."
They? Do you mean singular they or plural they?
Now is not the time for grammar, my musical friend.
Is this a group or a pronoun?
Your friends are responsible for the death of the village, as she looks down at the carnage on the floor.
Which one? The big green guy. I knew that.
She tugs your lapel till you come down to her face as she looks you eye to eye, her roomy, watery, elderly eyes, as she says, "Both of them, they are complicit."
The camera zooms in on a shocked Belsia as the screen freezes and AJ walks in from the side on a green screen. He's like, "And that's where we'll stop for a drinks break."
That is where we are going to pause this week's episode. Colleague on colleague, friend on friend, what will happen? Is this the end of the Crunk Fuckers? Will one finally fall? Will Tati choose a side? Will Belsiar finally lose the plot? There's only one way to find out, and that is to tune in next week. Right, it is a massive goodbye from all of us here at the Adventurous Anonymous podcast. We will see you back here next week, dear listeners. And remember, stay
tipsy. Poisoned.
Oh, Jesus. It's always one, isn't there? We need to see how this ends. Is someone going to die? Is this the end of one of the Crunk Fuckers?